Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 115, recorded October 5th, 2011. It turns into underwear. This Week in Google is brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic unlimited backup for your computer files with anytime, anywhere access. For a free trial plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIG. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, visit Netflix.com/TWIT. It's time for This Week in Google. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte here, and it's about time to talk about Google, the cloud, Facebook, Twitter, all of that stuff. And to my left, Gina Trapani from smarterware.org, founder of Lifehacker, joining us from San Diego. Hi, Gina.
Howdy. How's it going?
It's going great.
We could talk about Apple today, too.
I love it. We could talk about Apple. And it makes me love my Android phone even more, but I'll get to that in a second. That cackle is from the author of Public Parts, Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com. The book Public Parts just out now. Everybody must read it. It's about living life in public, which Jeff does in spades.
To a fault.
To a fault. That's a better phrase than in spades. In spades might be confusing. There it is.
Gina. Thank you.
Mine's at home on the coffee table. It's a coffee table book.
My last book made it into page one, which was the movie about the New York Times.
Yeah.
And the way it made it in was that it was David Carr's rest for his wrist.
I saw that.
Obviously unread and unused.
That's hysterical.
Yes.
But somebody must have done that on purpose to as a tip of the hat.
A little dig.
Oh, a little dig, you think?
I think so, yeah. It's all right.
Well,
I'd be David Carr's wrist. I'd do it.
Really? Something you want to share with us here?
He's curmudgeonly. Yeah.
He is a curmudgeon. That is true.
That is true.
We are going to watch the entire Apple keynote, thanks to Gizmodo. Are you ready for this? In 80 seconds. Is the video on here? The video is by Woody Jang. Yes, here it is. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you 80 seconds, the entire Apple keynote.
My first product launch. Just 10 years ago, we launched the original iPod here. Over 300 million iPods around the world. The number one smartphone in the world.
Cards is an app which lets you create and mail beautiful cards.
I can't wait to talk about that.
It's like a joke.
iMessage, reminders, Twitter, newsstand, camera, Game Center, Safari, mail, PC free. Next week.
iTunes Match, find my friends. All of this is part of iCloud.
All that's new inside the new iPhone 4S. A whole new chip, a great new antenna system with 8 megapixel camera with all new optics. 1080p HD video camera, AirPlay, iCloud. Everything about iOS 5, and now Siri.
Voice dials, control your music, messages, manage your calendar, reminders, maps, email, weather, docs, alarm clock, timers, contacts, you can create notes, you can search the web, Wikipedia, Wolfram Alpha.
I am a humble personal assistant.
The most amazing iPhone yet.
iPhone 3GS for free, an iPhone 4, it's just $99, and the brand new iPhone 4S at $199. It'll be available in a week.
Thank you very much.
Boy, I wish they'd done that version for us, because we got up early, we sat here for hours. Oh, man, it did feel a little low energy, didn't it? Even in that, where you chopped it and made it into 80 seconds, it felt like it was just kind of dragging.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched TWiT during the entire thing all morning, and I was sort of coding, and I had TWiT on in the background listening to what was going on. And then I went to lunch, and a friend of mine was like, oh, so what happened at the Apple thing? And I was like, I'm not really sure.
I watched it. I don't know.
I'm not sure. There's the iPhone 4S. And she was like, well, what's that? And I was like, it's not really different than the 4. Which, you know, I have to say, it's unfair. I'm really excited about iOS 5. I'm excited about that. I think there's some really good new stuff in it, new cloud capabilities. Excited about notifications finally kind of catching up to Android. And the Siri demo was super cool. The cards thing was ridiculous, but the Siri demo was really cool. So I'm excited for that.
Let's do the cards for a second, because that just amazes me. I was just beside myself. The Postal Department is dying. The stamps are dying. They're going to keep it alive. You know, what's next? iMorse code, iPigeon? Jeez, I really don't understand it. It was driving me nuts. I mean, there's tons of straight lines in it, but I didn't get it.
Well, there are other programs on the iPhone that do this already, including Andy Hertzfeld's. Yes. The only thing that baffled me is they spent the first 40 minutes rehashing sales statistics, the usual. They always do it, but the 40 minutes was long. And then the big first announcement is this, the cards you can print from your iPhone. I thought this had better get better fast. This is not a good sign. Main reason I bring it up on this show is the chief exciting new features for iPhone 4S are in every respect something already on Android. Am I wrong? Notifications?
Well, there's iOS 5 and then there's the iPhone 4S. So we kind of have to, differentiate.
Well, but you do need the 4S to do the Siri assistant.
You do, for sure.
So, but you're right. We're talking about software because hardware, there is some. In fact, it looks like this camera will be the best camera on a phone, except with the possible exception of the Nokia.
Yeah, I was excited about the camera.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's the good hardware.
Yes.
And now a better antenna. Nothing wrong with the old antenna.
Right. Just this one's better.
But this one's better.
This one's better.
We don't want you to think there was anything wrong, but we fixed it. but I have to say, it does feel like Apple is not innovating in most respects here. This is the notifications are straight out of Android. There's a little bit of an additional feature because they're live. So you could put live weather, live stocks in there. Mm. The voice assistant, we don't have it yet. But when we get it, I have to say it sounds a lot like what Android's had with its voice search for a long time. I could do most of those things with Android, right?
Yes, that's true. Although it looks a little more polished. It, with the Android voice commands, you kind of feel like you're speaking to a computer from the demo. Now, I haven't tried Siri. They gave it a little bit of Apple polish.
And
it seems like you're talking to a personal assistant.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the truth, I don't know how much I'm actually going to use it. I was wowed by the demo. I don't use voice commands on Android very much either. I just don't drive a whole lot. I imagine if I did, I probably would. But yeah, it looks like, Apple never does things kind of early and half-assed. It seems like they come late, but then they add a little extra. So I think the notifications have that little extra. Siri looks like it might have a little extra. But yeah, you're right. This is all about sort of parity with what Android has had for a while now.
The Siri thing does some interesting things. For instance, if somehow, and we again, this stuff demos so well. In fact, I use the Android search type, say, listen to Bob Dylan Forever Young, and then it plays it on Spotify. That's a great demo. How often do I do that in real life? Almost never, unless I'm showing off. And so these things do make great demos. But the idea that you could say, make an appointment at noon, and Siri talks back to you, which is something Android doesn't do, and will say, you already have an appointment there. Would you like me to move it?
That was a really cool example.
If that works, that's cool.
If that works.
But that's a big if.
I'm trying to imagine myself running along the water and telling my phone to reschedule an appointment.
Well, that's the thing, is how often do you really do
really
that? Yeah. How often do you dare to do that? The A5 processor, I think, is really at a parity only with the Galaxy S2. The S2's processor is that TI Exynos processor running at 1.2 gigahertz. The Galaxy S2 has a gig of RAM, which is what we think the iPhone 4S has, although Apple never says. It doesn't seem like, and the 8-megapixel camera on the Galaxy S2 is quite good.
Yeah.
Plus, it has a bigger Super AMOLED screen. They're not changing the screen. In fact, they're not changing the form factor at all, which I think is a huge error. Because, as everyone knows, people buy new phones because they don't want the old phone. They don't want to look, it looks dated.
You're really right.
They should have had fins.
Even new colors or something.
Just fins, put like fins that on it. Because then people will have to upgrade. Now, I read an interesting article that actually makes a lot of sense, that Apple is now slow playing the game.
they are going to release a phone that is an upgrade for the 2 years old folks. So this is the iPhone 4 for the 3GS owners. Next year, they do the iPhone 5 for the iPhone 4 owners. You see what I'm saying? Because yeah, it's a two-year term. Now, this kind of – I think this could make sense that you slow play it.
That shows how backwards the industry is, though.
Oh, right? Absolutely. If the phones come out.
The fact that we're imprisoned in 2 years is just absurd and really hurts the hardware industry, and Apple should have found a way to beat that down.
I agree. In the past, they have. They've upgraded every year, which is still slower than Android. But maybe they're saying to themselves, or maybe their research has shown, that consumers are pissed and say, look, I can't afford to buy a new phone every year. I will have to buy it every 2 years when I get that free upgrade. That's when I want a new phone. So it's 3GS owners who are now looking. It'll be iPhone 4 owners who will look.
Yeah, I'm sure not motivated to replace my iPhone 4. There's no reason whatsoever.
It's not enough of an upgrade.
Ew.
It's the 3G to 3GS parallel, right? That took a year, and it didn't change as much,
right?
The 3G to 3GS.
This changed more than that. A lot of the changes are almost all the changes are under the hood, though. I mean, the phone looks exactly the same. The only advantage to that, of course, is you can still use all your accessories. Your cases all fit. You know, that doesn't change, which I kind of am happy about that. We do now have a dual core processor, so that should be a big change under the hood. Screen is identical. Here's a great comparison. This is from thisismynext.com, comparing the 4, 4S, and the Galaxy S2. The screen on the Galaxy S2 is a lower resolution screen, although bigger. It's 4.3 to 4.5 inches, but only 800 by 480 compared to 960 by 640. It's not a Retina display. Now, no 4G on any of the iPhones. They claim they're faster now on HSPA Plus. So maybe they'll have parity. We'll see. They should get all of the benefit of the HSPA Plus if you have it in your neighborhood. Global roaming on CDMA, yes, because they're using a dual core chip. That's something that the Sprint and Verizon versions of the Galaxy S2 can. Actually, there's no Verizon version. Let's say the Bionic, which is Verizon's top of the line. We'll have to see how the camera is, but it looked like the camera might be better on spec. Certainly it can do things the other cameras in software.
Is anybody going to buy the phone based on the camera being a skunch better than another camera on another phone?
That's a good question. I think what Apple's moving to is don't buy it's not about phone. Don't buy a point and shoot. This phone is good enough to be a point and shoot.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not arguing with liking it.
I don't think they'll upgrade, but I think that
competitive advantage. No.
I think it's somewhat of an advantage. Well, I, it's very hard to explain. But for instance, the fact that it's ready to take a picture in 1.1 seconds, and it could take burst mode 0.5 second pictures. No phone can do that yet. No camera phone can do that yet. So that's pretty.
It's better
good.
To go that way than the megapixel fight, which is meaningless.
I agree. They even kind of acknowledge that. Storage is a push across the board. Wi-Fi is a push. Siri, this table really isn't fair because, as I said, Android has voice-to-text support.
Which I use for searches.
Yeah.
I
have to say, I dictate many text messages because
really?
I get tired. I get really tired. And the dictation is very good if you know how to do it. You have to modify. You have to speak clearly.
You also have to be alone.
Right? And you have to be alone.
If you're in New York, standing on the street saying...
Can't do it.
Theo Laporte.
Now, I'm sure Siri will have that same problem. My kids mess with me. I'll press the button, start the search, and Henry will start saying, trees, fruit, flies, 1, 3, 7. He screws with me every time. It drives me nuts.
And basically, if you have young kids, if you have a baby in the house, it just starts crying randomly.
It's not teenager friendly.
Gina, I got to ask you a question. How can you legally live in California and not drive much?
It's working at home in California that lets me do that. My commute is down the hall, which is nice.
I have a short commute, but I still drive a lot, I have to say.
The Siri assistant struck me as more akin to a parallel to voice commands versus voice to text. Like, it seemed less like a dictation tool and more like a command.
Well, we have commands. We can say listen to. We can say navigate to. I can say absolutely. Send an email. I can say send a text. I mean, this is Android... Android has, I would say, 80% of this functionality. It's the talk back to me stuff that is different, and we'll just have to see how well that works before we can.
To me, it's mainly search.
Great dictation? I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yes. One of the things they showed, again, as if they'd invented it, is on the keyboard, there's a little microphone button.
There's a microphone. Mm-hmm.
And you press it and you can dictate. And I got to say.
Very familiar.
Apple is suing Samsung over, you know, copying Apple. Samsung's already made noise that they may try to stop the 4S because it looks just like Android.
Well, they're going after them supposedly in France, which is kind of hilarious to pick that battleground too, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's good for, look, it's good for, cross-pollinization is good for us. So I'm not complaining at all. I just think that Apple kind of acts as if they invented this all, and it's not the case.
Well, you know, the other thing too is that I use, because I carry the iPhone now, I use Google Voice on the iPhone in Google Search.
Right.
Right. So it's, right. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter whether Apple has it or not. I'm using Google's.
Well, in any event, I think the thing that's very clear here is that Apple did not up the ante so much that the hot, top-of-the-line Android phones are going to be threatened. You know, we're going to see the Nexus Prime next Thursday, right, Eileen, or next Tuesday?
Tuesday. Next Tuesday.
So it will be the Android Nexus Prime will be out before the iPhone is.
And they've already made clear with a fairly dramatic form factor. Right,
there's a lot of interest. Eileen, who does All About Android, produces the show and is on the board right now. Can you? That's who the disembodied voice is, because I don't think we have a camera on her. But Eileen, what are people saying the Nexus Prime will include?
Well, we're not quite sure. The teaser video that they posted, and I can see if you can go to that.
I'll pull it up. Yeah,
let's see that. That's pretty cool.
There's a real curve to it, and there's something on top of it. And so there's sort of theories that it might be a tablet and phone or... not quite sure. I mean, we know it's ice cream sandwich.
And that's the other thing. It's ice cream sandwich. Do we know how much new stuff is an ice cream sandwich?
Well, they're talking about slight modifications to the app drawer. And
sorry about this white screen is coming up here.
It's going to look very much like honeycomb. Oh, you're not seeing the video.
Here's the video. I got it right here. Something big is coming, says Samsung. This is on YouTube. I don't think they'll mind us playing it. Everyday life, some things just go better together. Cookies, milk, a better snack. Newspaper,
Gina,
coffee,
and Leo,
a better morning. Gina and Jeff, a better plan. Wine, candles, a better moment. Another perfect combination is just around the corner. Get ready for it. Something big is coming. That's
just
it?
Even that. Even
wait
that.
A minute. Holy camoly. Yeah. By the way, this looks a little bit like what we were thinking.
There you go.
Let me pause it. We were thinking that the iPhone 5 might be. It may still be next June. Curved.
It's even more curved. I mean, it starts to make sense. It's curved like your face.
Very thin.
Yep.
Wacky. Very wacky.
And when you throw it, it comes back to you.
Eileen, who's going to carry it again? Sorry. I stepped on your punchline, Leo. That was a good one.
No, you didn't step on it. Sorry.
Well, actually, Google's streaming at youtube.com/Android. So they'll be streaming at 11:30.
You know, Samsung currently sells to everybody. You can get the Galaxy to us on everybody except Verizon, and that's only because they've got the Bionic, which is very comparable. I think they reasonably didn't want to muddy the waters. You know, I think the big question mark is how good is ice cream sandwich going to be? How much improvement?
Well, here's what I had lunch, as you know, 2 weeks ago with Bradley Horowitz, and he told me nothing of note, but I got the impression that it's going to be a big step, and it's going to be a big step for the kinds of things that Google can do with it. That when, you know, you look at Google Plus and other things like that, I think ice cream sandwich will have so many new hooks in it for both Google and for outside developers. Of things you can do, just neat stuff you can do. And so it's an advance of that form. So, you know, what's more important? Is it the software or the hardware? And if you can get both at once, you know, is that going to beat iPhone to the iPhone 5?
Here's Andy Rubin posting on Google Plus. Thank you, Andy, for finally posting on Google Plus. When we launched Android in 2007, we asked some kids if they had a magic phone, what would it do? And then notice at the end, he says,
if I had a magic phone, it would take me to the moon.
Okay, I think we can eliminate that as a rumor for...
well, no, not the Google guys. The Google guys want to go to the moon, so it makes perfect sense to me.
Ice cream
space
sandwich,
elevator, baby.
The first phone on the moon.
It would turn into underpants.
Okay, I think that Brad, I think that Andy is steering us a little astray here. Yeah. I don't think it's going to turn into underpants.
That's a cute video.
However,
it's kids saying that they really want their phone to make ice cream for them.
Take me to the moon. My dream phone would make cupcakes with sprinkles. It would turn into underpants. It would go super duper fast. Those are the wings. Help animals feel better. And make me into an astronaut. And have peanut butter sandwiches. Must give me a sandwich, please. Pizza. Make cookies. Then 100 vanillas. Then 1,000 vanillas. I would take pictures. Fit in my pocket and have a keyboard. Oh, just big. It sounds like ding, 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 beep, beep. Beep, 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 beep. Choo, 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 choo. Ring, ring, ring. It will get me anything I want.
What will your phone do?
Ice cream. Six cubes.
It's interesting. Ice cream at the end is exactly what
I like that's a plug for the Open Handset Alliance.
Right. It's
Android itself or.
Well, this goes back to 2007 before the G1 was even out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Andy's best indication of what ice cream a sandwich will do.
So there'll be a voice command, pseudo make me a sandwich.
Yes, I like it. I like it.
Well, I figured the iPhone 4S would come with iTongue so it could lick your stamps on your card.
Ah. Isn't that just really retro that it's that? And they made such a big deal out of it, as if you've been waiting for your phone to send greeting cards for many years.
You know, I've been involved with the Postal Department on and off in thinking strategy. There was this thing called Postal Vision 2020, was a conference that I helped put together. And we had Vint Cerf speak, and we also had the head of the Postal Regulatory Commission, Ruth Goldway, who did a little kind of boxing match over issues with Vint. And she was sitting up there saying that, really, we should find a way to get kids to get back into greeting cards.
That would help. That would save the Postal Service.
I said, next, now that Apple saved the Postal Service, next it'll start a newspaper.
As long as we're talking Android, we should mention that there is a big security flaw in HTC, the most recent HTC phones, including the Evo Evo 3D, we believe the Sensation, a number of others. HTC put some logging software on their phone with an update, and it turns out those log files, very extensive log files, are available to anybody. Not only that, you can get a privilege escalation very easily. HTC says we're working on it. We're going to fix it. There's another security flaw on. It happens to be just the Galaxy S2 on AT&T. Where if you let the phone, if the phone has a lock code, you turn the phone on. You see the lock code. You let it go back to sleep. Then turn it on again. No lock code. So they'll, I'm sure, fix that as well. And we should just be. To be fair, that's one thing Apple has going for it. There have not been a lot of security exploits on the iPhone. I think there is a legitimate... Let me ask you this, Gina. Do you think it's a legitimate perception that Android is a little more risky than the iPhone?
I do. I do, actually. I mean, I think that it's a legitimate perception to say that it's more secure and less secure. Like, by virtue of being open source and having the ability for third parties like HTC to build a layer on top of it, it opens up a little more risk because all the code isn't closed and completely vetted by Google, right? So in one way, it's more secure because there are more eyes on it, right? And in other ways, it opens up more risk. So I kind of take it like it balances out in the end. This security flaw, this HTC security flaw really bummed me out because these apps are just asking for permission to connect to the internet.
That's it. And they get everything else.
Right, which basically every app asks for. And it's one of the lowest security. I mean, you know, this isn't personal data, and it gets access to this log. And this log is generated by the HTC layer that goes on top of the Android core. So it was a bummer. And I think that because of the press that Android security vulnerabilities gets, I think that that there is a perception that Android is less secure, similar to the way that Windows seem less secure or sort of malware-laden as compared to the Mac. But I don't think that's actually the truth. I think I think that the benefit of open source is more eyes,
right.
So a little more security as well.
I mean, given the choice between open and closed source, I will always go open source. even though yes. there's some maybe some perceived chance of. And the other problem is, I think there's this feeling that that because Apple vets everything, it's safer, or Amazon vets everything, it's safer. You cannot do that good a job of vetting. You cannot, unless you have the source code and you spend a good deal of time with it, you can't right. say with any assurance that there's not malicious software in there. You just have to right. hope.
Exactly.
So Apple's not making it more secure by approving all the software. I think that's a myth.
Yep, I agree.
I don't know if it was in the list or not, but Google paid $100,000 to get people to go and reward them for finding bugs.
Right.
And it's clearly economical. I mean, that's not even a headcount, especially not for them. That's not
a good
lunch.
Point. That's not even one person.
You know, not far from it.
Yeah.
And I think that crowdsourcing that, being open so you can do it, makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
And as somebody pointed out, as long as there is a kill switch on both phones, which there is, that if a malicious app is discovered, it can be terminated remotely, which they can and has happened, at least on Android. That's the most important thing. Because this stuff does out. It doesn't. It's only a day or two before researchers or whoever start seeing strange activity on the phone and say, hey, wait a minute, hold on there.
Right. This is a huge community. So these switches are in place, and this is a huge community of people watching and using this platform, right? So there are no known apps that are taking advantage of this HTC flaw, but as soon as the flaw is there and it was discovered, but no known apps are taking advantage of it. The moment that an app does start to take advantage of it, it will get killed. People are watching now, right? Because people know.
Let me ask you a question. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jeff.
The kill switch, who has the authority to pull it, the manufacturer or the telco?
Well, in Apple's case, Apple.
Okay. What about
Android's case? I believe everybody, right?
It's the market. From what I understand, it's the market.
So Google.
So Google. So
which is more comfortable than you know, an Egyptian telco with Mubarak in charge.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's really important. And, you know, there have been exploits on both platforms. We haven't yet seen anything really horrible. It's just a matter of time, I feel like.
Right. I mean, Apple had that problem where they were logging, you know, location data for
similar
really
problem.
Long amount of time.
Similar reasons as HTC.
Yep.
You know, and Apple's had to use the kill switch in the past. Apple's had to had a login issue with the security code logins. So, I mean, there's nothing perfect. So I think maybe it's a fool's paradise to assume that, oh, my system's safe. Even BlackBerry, which is famous for its security, it's not safe.
No system is perfectly and absolutely secure. This is just a different approach, right? Apple takes a little bit more of a top-down approach. Google takes a more, depending on the community, you know, peer-to-peer kind of approach.
Right.
And I think, you know, both work to some degree, and sometimes there are problems, there are vulnerabilities, but it's the question is, how quickly are they addressed, and how are they addressed, and are the mechanisms in place to address them quickly and fairly?
Exactly. You're watching This Week in Google. Gina Trapani, Jeff Jarvis, Leo Laporte. We're going to talk about Motorugel. There's Motorugel in the news, but before we do, I'd like to talk about Carbonite.com, the right way to back up, because it's automatic and it's off-site and you need it. And if you're not using it, you better get on over to Carbonite.com right now and sign up for the two-week free trial. They have two versions, by the way. A home version, which allows you to back up everything on your internal drive on single computer. And that's for $59, by the way, for less than $5 a month. And then there's a business version for people who have multiple computers, multiple drives, and that you pay basically for the amount of data you store. You could try them free right now if you go to Carbonite.com. Automatic backup, completely secure, 128-bit. SSL uploading. You control the encryption keys if you want to encrypt, so it's safe there. It is cloud storage, so you can log on to your Carbonite account on any computer, on your smartphone, on your Android phone, your tablet, and there's your stuff. You can download it, put it on your system. It restores a snap if disaster happens. Your data is always protected. That's what I am looking for in a backup solution. Try it free for 2 weeks. Go to Carbonite.com. And use the offer code TWIG. If you decide to buy, use TWIG again, and you'll get 2 months free. 14 months for the price of 12. Carbonite, you got to back it up to get it back. Please, don't be one of those people who calls me. I get these calls every week on the radio show. Leo, my hard drive just crashed, and I don't have a backup. What do I do? You know, it's hard not to go, well, I told you, back it up. Carbonite.com, offer code TWIG. There's no excuse. It happens to actually, this is one that happens a lot, and it seems to happen with iPhone users more. Somebody called me and said, my dog just died. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. He said, well, I have all these pictures of the dog on my iPhone, and the iPhone died too. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, but you were syncing regularly, right? He said, no. So you mean you don't have a backup of what's on your iPhone? No, it's all on the iPhone. And I felt so terrible.
Yeah, that's sad.
And that, I mean, Apple's smart. That when you plug in the iPhone, it backs it up immediately. There's yeah, nothing you know comparable what? On the... yes.
When I'm in a rush, iPhoto starts up and it takes forever and I kill
no.
it all the time.
You say no. Yep. Yeah. But you don't do it every time.
Yeah, I do. I'm a very impatient man, Leo. I'm very busy. I have places to go, people to see. I can't wait around for this.
Well, with iCloud, you won't have to wait
You'll
anymore.
Get to tell me I told you so very soon.
Hey, what do you use? I use Titanium on the Android, but I have to root it. And the nice thing about Titanium Backup, and highly recommend it if you haven't used it, if you have a rooted Android phone, is it not only backs up all your apps, it backs up all your settings. So when you do a Titanium restore, it says, you know, say you have to, you know, refresh the phone or put a new ROM on it, it all comes back and all the passwords are still there, all the settings. Isn't that great? I love it. Titanium Backup. Did we lose Gina? Did she rush off to download it?
She froze.
She ran off to install it.
I was trying to elegantly recall her, but...
Which you did to me earlier, Eileen, and I appreciate the elegance of that.
Yeah. Wow, all this is happening behind the scenes. Yeah, it's blowing my mind.
I was suddenly off the air, and then I was back on in an instant. I said, wow, Eileen is so smooth.
She's good. You have to be like an octopus at that TD desk. She's very good at it. There we go. Hi, Gina. There we go.
Sorry, Skype beach balled on me. Okay.
You must be using a Mac.
Yeah. Pinwheel, beach ball.
I hate that. The blue screen of death is a beach ball of death. Hey, at least it's happier.
Right.
So
it hypnotizes you.
I'm hypnotized. Motorugal. Google has said, and this is Eric Schmidt talking in an interview on Bloomberg TV, that they are going to make handsets with Motorola if the acquisition goes through. But that other manufacturers should have nothing to fear. I'm sure that'll reassure them. The Android ecosystem, says Eric Schmidt, is the number one priority, and we won't do anything with Motorola or anybody else, by the way, that would screw up the dynamics of that industry. Well, that makes sense. We need strong, hard competition among all the Android players. We will not play favorites. Well, wait a minute now. Eric is so good at this. Okay, listen carefully. We will not play favorites in the way people are concerned about.
Right.
What?
So, however, in ways you'd never thought of.
We'll figure out. Yeah. So, hey. Well, here's an example. One of the ways Google plays favorites is hidden API calls, right? We know there are hidden API calls that are not published. They're not public. But Google uses them. So that's playing favorites. But people aren't concerned about it because they don't know it.
Well, just play fast forward. You're going to get, presuming it goes through and all that, and everything's, well, it's not a big deal. Play fast forward 5 years, and the next time Eric Schmidt's sitting before Senate again.
Right. We didn't play favorites in the way you're concerned about. He says, from our perspective on the patent issue, we will end up having enough patents that we can end up with a rough truce with everybody else. This is huge, which is how it's done. That's been the pattern in all other industries. I expect something similar in ours. We're actually very happy with Motorola. The fact they also had one of the best patent portfolios was certainly a component of our decision, but not the only one. So he's basically saying we bought them for the handsets, too.
See, I just wish that he would have said, we bought them for a defensive patent portfolio. Our priority is protecting Android, and the patents had everything to do with that. And, oh, yeah, sure, we'll have a little subsidiary that makes handsets, too.
I wish he'd said that, too, but he's being honest. That's Eric's flaw, isn't it?
You think that's it?
I think when Eric talks, I think he's not as adept as one would hope or as one would expect for a chairman of the board at spinning. Is he? He's not a good spinner.
Yes and no. I think the problem is that he presumes the world is too smart. He cuts ahead on things.
I get it.
Yeah, I actually think he's. I actually think he's not a bad spinner. Yeah, he has his, you know, Schmidtarian quotes that amuse us all. And he, as he said to me, it's death by Twitter. Yeah, that's an issue. But I think that in a way he does, you know, he has a way, it's rather professorial. When people say, is Google too big? And
he's
says, well, who would you want to run it? Us or the government, right? It's very Socratic method. He doesn't just come out with a line. He tries to push you into your own illogic. That's what I guess I'm trying to say.
That makes actually that's great. I think that's a little googly, right?
Very,
I think Google, yeah,
very much so.
And I like that about Google.
Everything's a puzzle.
Yeah, but I guess I'm an intellectual too, so I you know I kind of like that. I hate spin. I don't want to be spun. Mm-hmm. And I love the Socratic method. Make me think, Eric. Make me think. What is PhoneGap, Gina Trapani?
PhoneGap is a wrapper for mobile operating systems to run HTML5 web-based apps as native apps, basically. So it lets you build an HTML5 JavaScript CSS app and then bundle it up with PhoneGap, and then suddenly you've got an app that you can deliver through the Android market, install natively on Android and on iPhone, and I believe probably other mobile operating systems, maybe even Windows and BlackBerry, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a really good way. It's a kind of write once, get a native app on any mobile OS.
So and it works with Dreamweaver, so this kind of makes sense because Dreamweaver is an Adobe product. Adobe just bought them.
Yeah, smart move.
Yeah. Gina, question. Self-serving question. If we were to teach journalists who want to stay around longer certain technologies and one that would allow them to do essential development, probably knowing they're in the content business, what do we teach them? HTML5, Java.
Oh, God, I would hope you wouldn't have to be a developer if you're going to be a journalist.
I agree, but there's a push on that. There are people who want to create Frankenstein monsters, and that's what we need. I've fought it hard. I've said, no, you're the boss. You're the one who specs, and you get somebody to do it for you. But it's so hard to find development talent now, and there's a push among some of them.
I think if you're a journalist, I'll give you a strong argument. Look at TechCrunch. It runs on WordPress. I think if you're a journalist, stick to your knitting.
Yeah, right.
Focus on what you do, which is journalism. There's a content management, a canned content management system out there that you can use. There's Drupal. I mean, maybe. I don't know, Gina. I won't speak for Gina. She's an actual developer. But I just think that's a lot to say, learn HTML5. I think, if anything, learn, you know, find a content management system you like and can work with. But I don't think you need to learn HTML5. Gina, am I wrong?
Yeah, I see your point. I mean, my answer is absolutely going to be learn web technologies. Don't learn, system OS-specific technologies. So I would have said HTML5 and JavaScript. But then again, I mean, it depends. What are you trying to teach your students? I mean, you're trying to teach them to innovate, right? To come up with new ways to present content and new ways to interact with content.
Right. And it's not always content, by the way. It can be services. It can be things that work with people. And what I've learned I have to teach them is how to prototype.
Right. Exactly. You want to teach them how to spec and prototype and how to work with developers to make those things happen. But I agree with Leo in that I think it's probably unrealistic to ask journalists to both create content and then create the tools that deliver that content. I think data visualization is really important and huge. Really important. So I think you know, journalists, young up and coming journalists and bloggers should know the Google Charts API really well and be able to come up, you know, create charts based on data sets that are freely available. In fact, we have a story about some smartphone data that we'll get to at some point. So I think that kind of thing is super important. But yeah, I think you're right. Rapid prototyping and then communicating with development teams. Hey, you know, I worked at Gawker for years. We had an in-house tech team that wound up building out our own CMS. I mean, because we were trying to innovate in this space. I mean, WordPress is great, but I know that TechCrunch and GigaOm, they have kind of custom plugins built for that stuff too. So if you're just looking to publish content, an available CMS right off the shelf, totally going to work. But if you want to teach your students to innovate and come up with new ways to deal with that content or deal with services, then I think it's about rapid prototyping and communicating with developers to create those things
consulting.
With them.
Kevin Marks also says in the chat room, and he's right, the other thing that we have the challenge to teach I didn't mean to go off on this vent, but it's data journalism.
That's what I think.
Yes.
And really understanding that.
I think you have a limited a scope. I mean, you can only learn so much, right? So your primary thing is to become a good journalist. But in learning to be a good journalist in the modern era, you also have to learn things like how to dig through data, how to use data, how to visualize data. I don't think you should worry so much about how to present what you're doing or how to create a platform for what you're doing. I would hope that there'd be people who specialize in that that you could work with. Right? I mean, there's only so, and I partly also say that from my own experience because, you know, what we look for, what I'm always looking for is a person who can be a journalist and understand technology, and that's far and few between.
Yeah. It's weird that we have students who are constantly pressuring us to teach them more technology, and so I'm trying to, you know, unfreeze myself and figure out what that might be. You see me right now in contemplative
Jeff.
I'm thinking very hard and can talk at the same time. It's really quite a skill. Hey.
Now I'm frozen. Oh, I'm sorry. Who knows? It's a whole brave new world for not just journalists, but for any kid going to college right now. And so I don't think it hurts to know technology, but not everybody's going to have
Well, that's kind of where Jake is. Jake is thinking now not of majoring in computer science because he kind of thinks, well, I kind of know enough to make some stuff and branch out and he's taking poli sci and
good on him. I mean, my son's interested in music. And of course, what is he learning? Electronic music. So technology might be the canvas for a lot of stuff that you do. But I do also think there's some people who just don't take to technology, and I'd hate to think that those people won't have a place in the future.
True.
That's scary.
the heck with them.
There's got to be a Picasso out there who just wants to put paint on canvas, right?
He'd be using an iPad like you don't know it.
Actually, I wonder. That's really interesting.
It would be interesting. Would he be using Photoshop to mangle ears and clocks and things?
I don't think so, but it would be my best guess, but I don't know. I think that he was very tactile.
True.
I don't know. That's a good question. A lot of artists that I know are working with their hands, and this is not working with your hands, whatever it is. It's working with your noggin, maybe.
Yeah.
Would Picasso use a Wacom? We'll have to ask. You know who wrote the book on Picasso? It's Ariana Stassinopoulos Huffington. She could tell us.
Really?
Yeah, she wrote a very big bio. Not a very good one, but a very big bio of Picasso. That's when I met her.
Really?
Before she was a Huffington.
Wow.
She was a Stassinopoulos.
That took us way off.
Sometimes it's just not good to know stuff. Gingerbread has a growth spurt. 38.2% of all devices now are running Gingerbread. This is actually very good news. You still see Android 2.1. You still see a little sliver of 1.5 and 1.6. But now I would say almost 75% of all phones are running at least Froyo. 45% Froyo, 38.2% Gingerbread, and Honeycomb, total of less than 2%.
The Gingerbread Man has hit puberty.
Yes, he's had a growth spurt.
Voice is changing.
He's talking like this.
Fuzz on the chin.
And then just as soon as he gets comfortable with his new hair, ice cream sandwich comes along.
Smashed by the sandwich.
Smushed.
Smushed.
He got smushed by the sandwich. This is a big problem, I have to say. And this is one thing that Apple just doesn't have to worry about is these, you know, how many versions? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 versions of Android out there, at least?
It's a lot of versions. And it's a pain in the rear for developers to make sure that your app is compatible across all of those.
Let's put it this way. More phones have Cupcake and Donut on them than have Honeycomb on them.
Wow.
That's terrible.
Sorry. And people with Cupcake and Donut can't do nothing.
No.
Eclair is 11%. That's Android 2.1. That's a problem. And I kind of blame the handset manufacturers. I think that's exactly why Google bought Motorola, is to say, look, dudes, you can't, I don't know. Maybe they don't have enough horsepower. I don't know.
But Leo, is that really their fault? Or is it, I mean, the architecture?
They don't have a choice.
Yeah.
It's an open handset alliance, baby.
Well, it's going to be an 18-month turnaround, right? From here on in, basically,
That's what they say, yeah.
That if you're going to have the Google logo on your handset, you've got to update over 18 months. So that's reasonable. And I actually think that's an interesting point that you made, Leo, is that if Motorola always has the latest update to Android, that's a little bit of a motivation for everyone else to catch up sooner.
And I think that's where Eric's weasel words come from. Is, well, we may do things that you wouldn't conceive of. One would be just make sure that Motorola handsets always have the latest version of Android on them.
Yeah. Right.
Which just means you got to do it too, or you're going to be lost. And that is kind of anti-competitive, but it's really not. It's just pushing people.
It's not as long as everybody else can do it.
They could do it, exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So one thing that the iPhone 4S did not have, no surprise, NFC. Google Wallet is, according to PayPal, of course, PayPal might have a little, little ox to fry in this. They filed a lawsuit against Google and two former PayPal executives who were in charge of mobile payments at Google, saying misappropriation of trade secrets, breach of fiduciary duty. Those allegations were thrown out. But it does tell you that PayPal is kind of a little nervous, I guess, about Google Wallet. I don't think they need to worry so much. It's going to be a while before NFC takes off. There's only one Google phone on one carrier that supports it.
Who should buy Square?
Ah.
Oh.
Well, Square's, you know, and this is another company that says, forget NFC, you know, Square's better.
But what they have instead, though, is thinking through the infrastructure of being a merchant and exchange and things like that.
Right. They're building an infrastructure that could conceivably.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whatever the hardware, doesn't matter then.
Article on Business Insider says that strippers are now using Square.
Oh. Well, there was a great column today. I think it was, it was a Politico. A female reporter went to a strip bar in Washington to look at what the implications of the end of the dollar bill and the
oh, my
court.
God. Do they have Square down huge. There?
The problem is that how do you put Square in a garter belt?
It's easy to swipe.
The guy at the strip club said that he's collected millions of single dollar bills over the years. Yeah. That's however it's been there.
Yeah, you know? You don't want to know where those bills have been either.
Wow.
Kindle pre-orders, according to a leaked report, were very strong. 95,000 in the first day. Amazon, according to sales report that was leaked to Cult of Android, has sold pre-ordered a quarter of a million Fires in 5 days. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good. Not surprising.
Not iPad 2 sales pace. iPad 2 sold 2.5 million in the first month.
This is the first month since it was available.
It's
right?
close, so. Though. It'd be 1.5 million in a month. So that's pretty close. Yeah, you're right.
Well, you don't have the cult thing.
Right.
Which reminds me, Leo, I was thinking about this today. Just a slight diversion.
Yes. No, divert away because I'm bored.
That's not a good sign.
Uh-oh.
We better step it up, Jeff.
Yeah. And if I'm bored, I can tell you the audience is bored.
You don't want me to spice it up. That'd be bad. I'm at the creepy line all the time. I live on the creepy line.
He lives on the creepy line.
Where was I going? Oh, it occurred to me that I couldn't ever imagine this week at Amazon.
No. Although.
Right? And Amazon's an important company. They're doing a lot of amazing things. But what is it about the brand and position of Amazon that just obviates that?
They just don't have enough interesting like consumer products interesting to consumers to talk about. Although I think probably developers, engineers would be interested in a lot of the services.
Yeah, you can talk about S3, EC2, kind of infrastructure-y, enterprise-y. You could do an Amazon deal of the day show.
Right.
In a sense, Gina, they talk to consumers as consumers more than Facebook or Google or Android, pardon me, Right? I mean, I'm not pushing for it. I don't think it would work either. But it's weird that Amazon never saw itself in that position of having a direct relationship, I think, with and having a having a bond of brand with its people.
Yeah.
Right. It's basically Amazon is a shopping tool. It's a cash register, essentially. I mean, the Kindle is just going to be another thing that they sell on the site. And I have to say, I think that the sales are going to go a lot higher once it is available. Well, maybe that's not true because it's on the front page of Amazon.com now. But just the power of being of the promotion throughout the Amazon.com site is so powerful because people go to Amazon to shop and spend money. $1.99, you know, sure.
I mean, the other reason it didn't sell huge, I mean, it sold huge, but it's not going to have that same kind of sale as the iPad, obviously, is it is the opposite of an early adopter's device.
Interesting.
Aside from you, Leo, anyone who has an iPad, I don't see any reason to buy. And I want one, too, because it's a toy.
No, you don't
I don't
need
see
both.
Any reason to buy a Fire.
You don't need both. I think that and I actually said that I don't think it's going to hurt the iPad too badly. But I do think there's a fraction of the potential new iPad owners who will buy a Kindle Fire instead.
Yeah, I agree with all that.
So
but I'm saying you're not going to have a rush. It's not going to be
no,
this.
No, I agree. I agree. I think that, in fact, it probably doesn't hurt iPad until the next iPad's out.
Right.
Mm. I mean, I would say everybody who wants an iPad's probably bought one.
Do you think there's going to be a 7-inch iPad?
No.
But there might
Steve's legacy will live on.
Yes.
But there might be a 10-inch Fire.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you know, they made the Kindle DX, which was such a specialty device. It didn't do that well because people didn't want a big clunky thing. In fact, you might make the case that the Fire is too big and heavy as is. You know, the backlit color, heavy. It's not a good reader compared to the Kindle.
Here's another question for you. So Ice Cream Sandwich comes out, and let's say it does have lots of wowie things, but you're not going to get it on the Fire. Ever.
You won't. That's right. Because it's not Android. It just...
Right.
Right. They never said Android. They never said Google. By the way, I've just learned Android now has an app for printing postcards.
They've had one.
Even in this Apple stole. Postcard on the Run. Design and mail real postcards from your Android device. There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
One of many.
It's one of many.
I have one family member, a cousin in New York, who is not online at all. And what I would want from iOS is just to send to automatically prompt me for a photo to send her a card through that app once a year for her birthday.
Isn't that a good idea? That's what it should do.
Yeah, for that one person who you actually still send cards. I mean, does everybody have one? Do you guys send cards? Twit sends Christmas cards.
Yes, it does, but I wouldn't do it for my iPhone. It's a long list. It'd take a little while. I'm not going to send cards.
I was thinking maybe my
mother, would I send a card to my mom? Happy birthday, Mom. No.
I don't do cards. My in-laws do them, but they're always those flowery ones. You know.
My mom, even, who is 77, actually, she'll be 79 next January. My mom...
She just skipped the year, Leo? How'd she do that?
Well, she was born in 33. I'm doing the math.
She said she's 77.
She was 77. She's actually 78. She'll be 79 next year.
Okay.
She sends e-greetings. She hasn't sent maybe she sends my kids physical cards. You know who sends physical cards? Grandmothers to grandkids. And they put a dollar bill in there.
Yes.
And that's the only people. And they can't do that with an iPhone.
It's true.
So that's
PayPal. Hey, pal. They can put PayPal in there.
Yeah, you know what I sent mom for her birthday? I sent her an electronic greeting from Netflix that says, happy birthday. Here's another year of Netflix.
And mom used the code to get a free month at Netflix.
Yep. And this is, and frankly, that's the card. But no, it's not made up. It's true. You know, I started this when Netflix was just DVDs. I started this when maybe 5-6 years ago. She did not have a DVD player. So for that birthday, I think for that Christmas, because her birthday is January 2nd. So for that Christmas, I sent her a TV that had a built-in DVD player. And then I got her on January 2nd. I sent her a year's of Netflix. I have to say, last year she said, honey, because Netflix raised their price, it's only going to go for 9 months. But you know what? I don't want the discs anymore. I'm just going to do the streaming. And now it's like 18 months. So it's only $7.99 a month. It's actually a really cheap present, you know, for my mom. And it gives and gives and gives because she watches movies like crazy. Netflix is fantastic. Great movies. I missed Elegy last year, the Philip Roth novel that Ben Kingsley and Penelope Cruz. Very good movie. Really enjoyed that. Was watching that last night. Swingers. That's a great. Boy, is that a classic movie. Whoa. What happened? I opened a new tab. See, there's a Netflix app in Chrome, which I really like. You can also watch Netflix, of course, besides watching it on your computer, on your iPad, your Android phone, your all the Android phones now. They basically rolled it out to everybody. All the tablets.
I think except for those that have Cupcake or
not. Yeah, if you're running Eclair, sorry, you're out of luck. Get a new phone. It's worth it just for this. Good Will Hunting, The Office. Oh, see, and you see 30 Rock and Office, new episodes. So, and this is all instant and unlimited and just $7.99 a month. And, you know, when I say it that way, you're probably thinking $799 a month because it's worth that much. But no, $7.99 a month for Netflix. If you're already a Netflix member, just check it out. If you're not, try it out for a month free, netflix.com/twit. And do share this with your friends and family. Make sure they use the, oh, some new Woody Allen movies just coming in. netflix.com/twit. Give it a try today. You know, I think with this new Galaxy S2, the big 4.5-inch screen, I bet you Netflix would look pretty good on there. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. The camera is great on that phone. Oh, my goodness. You love that camera on the phone?
Oh, I was just saying I've watched Netflix videos on my phone, and it looks great.
Yeah.
It's just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that Super AMOLED screen. Mm-hmm. It's not all resolution, Apple. Sometimes it's just deep, rich color. Hashtags on Google Plus. Did you see that?
Yeah.
About Jeff.
Yeah, I'm very happy. It's I always remind myself it's just a specialized form of search. And in fact, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but the hashtag there doesn't turn into a link if you put a hashtag on your post, does it?
No, and yeah, I mean,
that's kind of really weird.
It needs to go a little bit farther, but I think it's so important to do. I wrote a piece this week that Occupy Wall Street is the first hashtag revolt. Right.
Yes.
I mean, it people gathered around. People are frustrated because it doesn't have clear demands and a clear spin, but that's the point of it. No one owns it. It's the first really distributed revolt.
So what you do is you type hash Occupy Wall Street in your search, and then you get all of the...
Wall Street spelled out, I hope.
Oh, golly. Let me do that right. Actually, both worked. So
both work, and OWS works too, which is...
Yeah, Google's doing something interesting with this. They're obviously parsing it a little bit.
And, of course, you can save the search and then start to follow that search.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, up on the top, it'll let you save it.
Save. So it becomes a Spark.
And now Spark is a mix of news and conversation.
Right.
Yeah, that's nice.
How is this different?
Or is this just regular search? Is this just people using hashtags and then Google
people using
providing
hashtags.
Search?
That's pretty much it.
So it isn't a feature that's been added?
Not yet. Not really.
Okay.
Interesting. So Twitter's culture is coming over to Google Plus. Very interesting.
I like it that Google, instead of using at, used plus. It's just, it's like when Google first came around, we actually used this. John C. Dvorak would use this as a way to test somebody's tech savvy. He'd say, what do you use to search? And if they said Alta Vista, he'd go, and if they said Google, he'd go, oh. And it's like, you know, what's your email address? AOL.com or gmail.com? You know, it's like that. Well, hey, what's your handle? Plus Gina Trapani?
Or at.
At Gina Trapani?
Oh, I still love Twitter, though. And the at really goes back to IRC, right?
Yeah, email itself, right?
Email itself.
Yeah.
Yep.
The space in Google Plus to express your handle in the outside world, because there's a space in it,
which
is a little weird.
Right.
Yes, I'm glad they have a space. The space is great, but it's not how we killed spaces.
This is, I almost don't even want to report the story, but I will, from CNET. Google management's public use of Google Plus. No posts ever. All of the yellow people here. Red, no account at all. Active, green. Minimal use, blue.
This is a good looking chart. And I love how they use the Google colors in the chart.
Yeah. So Vic Gundotra, of course, is published 150 times. Sundar Pichai of Chrome, 58 times. Those are the top two. But then there's all sorts of people, including Eric Schmidt.
Never
has posted. He doesn't even have an account on Google Plus, as far as we know. Larry Page has posted 7 times. Andy Rubin 8 times, Sergey Brin 15 times. Don't you think they should be forced to eat their own dog food? Or no?
Who forces them? They're the bosses.
Oh, good point.
No one forces them. You know, it's an interesting reflection. I think that this just kind of proves that social is not in Google's original DNA and in the DNA of upper management. It sounded like this, you know, I think that the push towards social came from the bottom. And actually the story behind it is that there was this big meeting where people got together in little groups and brainstormed. And this one engineer, kind of low-level engineer, kind of had this huge rant about Facebook and social and how important it was. And then I think Vic heard that and asked the engineer to stand up and tell the whole room. So I think it kind of came from the bottom. And I think the fact that the executives don't use Google Plus, with the exception of Vic and Bradley, is kind of, you know, reflective of that. Also, they're busy.
Well, here's the other thing.
We don't have anything to do. They have something to do. We're just sitting around.
Here's the problem for them. Lawyers would probably have to read what they wrote.
Yeah.
Right. Life is kind of different, I think, when you're at that
sad.
Level of the company.
I know. That's sad.
But it is sad.
It's true.
You know, but then again, you know, if you're the Mark Benioff kind in the world or people like that, then, you know, you just say what you think.
Right.
And if Google were a little more human in that way, it wouldn't be bad.
Did you see that Larry Ellison fired Mark Benioff from the keynote today?
Yeah. But then Benioff did the keynote across the street.
At the hotel.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, thank you, Mark. Plugged public park.
Did he really? At his talk?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yes.
Nice. Sounds like that. At the same time today, we had Mark Zuckerberg insisting, "I use Facebook all day." That was a story that was out there.
I believe he does.
Why
wouldn't he? It's his.
He posts public post to his profile.
He does now. You can follow him. Yeah, you can.
I subscribe to him. He posted the other day. I just celebrated my 10,000th day alive. So I looked up. And I've had 20,030 days alive. I missed my 20,000th day alive.
Aww.
It was September 1st.
Did you regain your time lost when you left Facebook?
Time lost?
Didn't you leave Facebook entirely?
Oh, yeah. No, none of that was preserved.
It was gone. Okay.
That's all gone. Oh, why? I don't care about that. There wasn't that much stuff up there. I'm trying to figure out, because I did set up the timeline. You know, there's a little hack. You make yourself a developer, set up an app, and you can have a timeline. So I did set up the timeline, and I actually really like it, which tells me it's going to be a flop, by the way.
Because we liked Buzz.
Yeah. I love it.
Buzz wave.
I love it, which means that normal people will hate it. But I just think it's so cool. You know, it puts together all your activities and, you know, people. And so you can now start to. I showed you this last time. I mean, I put my baby pictures in. But I'm trying to figure out how to put other stuff in there, and I haven't quite figured it out. But I actually want to spend a few hours just filling out this timeline. That just shows how what a nerd I am.
Yeah. You're a digital scrapbooker, Leo.
It is. It's digital scrapbooking.
It totally is. You need some sparkles and some cutout hearts, foam hearts to stick in there.
We need a Google Plus convention.
You know, what they need is stickers and stamps.
Yes.
They should really do that. I guess they stopped doing this. Remember you could buy virtual gifts for like real money?
Yes.
Give them to people on Facebook? That's gone, isn't it?
I think so.
They ought to bring that back. They should.
That or no one's given me one.
No, I think it's gone, which is really crazy because they must have made a ton of money on that. Susan Kare, who did the original Mac icons, was designing little gifts.
I hate them.
They should do that for the timeline. I'd buy some, you know, it's my birthday stamps.
Then you feel like you got to buy somebody else the gift.
What's worse, the cards or the gifts?
I don't know. N5GM asked me in the chat room, are you going to put all your ex-girlfriends in your timeline? I am.
Really?
Yeah, I already have one ex-girlfriend on my timeline. My first girlfriend.
Wow.
Oh.
That's it. I'm stalking Leo.
Well, no, it's not done yet.
Okay.
I want to have it all done by the time it rolls out. I guess it's actually delayed. Did you see this? They're getting sued.
I think didn't they beat that down? I saw some update on that.
Oh, they did. Okay, so now they're going.
I'm not sure.
The timeline trademark. You know who could sue them, though? There are about 8 companies that were doing almost exactly the same thing, where you upload your stuff and it makes a timeline of your life.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, if they start patenting our lives, we're in a real problem.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right.
Marissa Meyer, why did she take a job at Google? It was 1999. She was a young engineer weighing offers from several startups during the dot-com boom. She liked Google because, among other things, she'd be the first woman on a team of merely 8 people. She also got jeers when she visited another startup where there were 48 males.
That, can you believe that?
Hey, baby, wow. Hubba hubba, you're hot.
Yeah, cheats.
Wow, it's like I'd rather be on a team with 8 dudes instead of 48 dudes.
Ay, ay, ay. But the real reason, and this is...
on behalf of all men, Gina, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
We apologize.
I give a blanket apology to every woman in the world. Just a blanket apology. It's not our fault. We're poisoned. Our brains are poisoned with testosterone.
Just blame the testosterone.
It's not our fault, you know. We try. We try, but we have no choice.
It's like hair growing in the ears. You
exactly.
know,
it just happens.
It just sprouts there.
We can't help it. It's the testosterone speaking. She was at a summit, Fortune Magazine's Most Powerful Women Summit in Laguna Niguel, California, on Monday with Lululemon's CEO talking about why she took a job at Google. But she says, the real reason I took a job at Google, I thought it had a 98% chance of failing. It turns out that the 2% odds of success were far greater than what she thought others would have. In other words, she thought they were likely to fail, but the least likely to fail of all the places she visited.
Yeah, she came up with an algorithm, didn't she? Didn't she kind of come up with a decision table where she had all these different factors, including, like, possibility of success, and then just weighed them out?
Okay.
That makes complete sense to me. It's very logical.
The key to success is often failure. It's totally fine if failure, you just have to fail fast. Google focuses about 70% of its time on its core business, 20% of its time on related businesses. That leaves 10% of its time on far-flung ideas. The key to is to avoid investing too much time and resources into any idea before it's proven to be successful. They're such an engineering-driven company, aren't they?
Yeah, they can't help it. Speaking of not being able to help it, that's so much better there.
You know, she said, of course, it was in the Stephen Levy book is because Larry and Sergey were Montessori kids.
Yes.
That's the other reason. I don't buy that. Now, this is an interesting story. Google wants to do ad circulars. Apparently, there's demand for this among some Google advertisers. You got to feel sorry for newspapers. They want
the kidneys.
Just hit them where it hurts. Of course, almost all newspapers were basically invented to deliver full-page ad circulars to people.
The only reason to still print. In the economics of newspapers, you see some papers are trying to think about going down a 1 or 2 day frequency, and the reason that they're doing that is not because there's only news 2 days a week. It's because that's when they distribute what are called freestanding inserts, coupons, and circulars.
And I remember in the Chronicle that the big page, you know, the big moneymaker in the San Francisco Chronicle for years, you'll remember this, Jeff, next to Herb Cain was Macy's.
Yeah.
And Herb Cain had a little thin, skinny column that everybody read because he was the San Francisco columnist. And he even would refer to the Macy's ad because he knew there's always a big Macy's display ad right next to me. And he was the sugar... the honey to bring people in so that they'd see the Macy's ad.
If I told the story before, stop me. That's a blanket rule of permission at all times.
No.
When I worked for the Daily News after I came back from a strike in New York, coupons are controlled by Rupert Murdoch. And the two of them, Robert Maxwell, who bought us, was a robber baron of his own sort, were in a huge feud. So we had no coupons. When they finally reached peace... the week that the paper came back with coupons, our circulation that week alone went up 120,000. So people weren't buying the news and all the stuff I was working for. They're buying the coupons.
It's fish wrap and coupons.
Yeah. Birdcage liner.
And coupons.
So now if Google, and there have been other efforts to figure out how to put coupons and circulars are online, how do you find out what's at Target and Best Buy and such? But if Google can help them really figure it out and recognizes the business proposition, which is that the circular is a media property where manufacturers pay to be.
Right.
And if they can enable those kinds of companies to make money on it and make sales through it, that is going to be the last straw for a lot of newspapers. Though I've said it before, but I think it's going to hurt them badly.
Supposedly you'll start seeing it today. They're working with the two biggest buyers of full page ads in newspapers today, Macy's and Best Buy. And they're going to have web circulars. They're going to look like the full page ad inserts in newspapers. Oh, man. It just starts to hurt after a while.
Yeah.
New Google Doc for Androids, 3-column redesign and more functionality. That's good. That goes along with the Google Docs redesign. We were talking about before the show began, because we use Google Docs for the show. And I was just noting that in Google Docs, the spreadsheets now look like they're little gifts, little wrapped Christmas presents. Oh, it just makes me happy when I see that.
It's a present made of data.
I actually like the new design. This is kind of nice. Go along with the new Gmail design. All this stuff's going to start looking like this. I don't know how you'd characterize it. Cleaner?
Just cleaner,
simpler, yeah.
Google Voice just got this redesign as well, and I called it tappable on Twitter, and Matt Cutts laughed at me and said that could be taken a lot of different ways.
No.
But
it means you want to tap it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Clearly.
I'll tap that.
If there's anything you want to tap online.
No, it's the tablet thing. Everything has to be touch.
It's a touch interface. Yep. So bigger touch targets and cleaner separation, white space. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited. I just got this text. Hey, I got the money I needed. I just got a Google Voice spam.
Google Voice spam? Block that.
Holy
sucker.
Cow.
Right now.
Did they do that? Bastards. Wait a minute. Let me just make sure it's not real. Hey, I just got the money I needed. They approved me for $1,500 at onehrloansite.com. Check out their site, too. Respond no to end. Now, kids, do not respond, okay? Do I have to tell you that?
not us, but right.
Do
no,
not,
do not
you
respond.
Do not respond.
You block.
Block, but do not respond. Google and AOL both got my hopes up. Google is apparently paying $100 million to producers for new YouTube content. AOL says they're doing a similar amount of money to video producers for original content, specifically for YouTube or AOL. I'm ready.
Well, okay, Leo. All right, Leo. Are you off?
You know who they're going to? Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
And Shine Reveille. That's the company that makes The Office and Ugly Betty. Other expected partners, all the big names, IAC, DECA.
That's what disappointed me. I mean, you know, I understand why they're doing it. I get it. They want to grab the marquee names, and there's a war going on over that. But I don't want this to be...
Let's have some original content.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. This is the platform for every regular person to make content, and this deal is asking people who create content for TV.
Well, they don't
to make it on this platform.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the theory is they don't need to get regular people to do it; they'll do it. So, but in order to get like the big name producers to make high quality premium content, I have to say, I mean, this doesn't surprise me. We've had some conversations with some of these companies, and they don't want us.
Leo, would you do something like this?
Well, what do you mean do something like this? If they said, "Here's $5 million," would you produce some content for YouTube? Hell yeah. Why wouldn't I?
Well, I mean, as opposed to running your own outfit where you...
Well, I'd still run my own outfit.
That's the thing. You still own your stuff.
I don't think Shine Reveille is suddenly a Google property.
Huh?
They're just saying, if we give you some seed capital, because I think the presumption is, you guys can't sell ads on this stuff. You're not going to make money on it. So we'll give you the money that you would have made.
Well, actually, it's an advance against Google ad sales.
Yeah.
So that's all it is. They're upfronting the capital. It's like Kickstarter for TV. They're upfronting the capital, and it's a books the same way.
Right.
It's an advance, you know. And Google's going to lose money on that, but it's going to draw people over, it's going to motivate them around. So you know, well, what do you think they want besides marquee names? And of course, you are one. But what do you think they want?
They want traditional mainstream production to start moving to the internet. Really,
like 22-minute sitcoms.
No, they want 10. They want 5. They want 10 minutes. They want Funny or Die stuff is what they want. That's okay. I understand.
The Twitcom.
Yeah, no. See, we're not. You're just not. In fact,
I'm telling you, Dvorak, there's a sitcom in that man.
We talked with YouTube Live. They didn't even know who we were. They had no idea who we were.
That's crazy.
They said, what is it that you do? In fact, we had several conversations, and at each time I talked with the same person, I had to explain what it is we do. He had never seen it, never heard of it.
Let me guess, they hired this person from Warner Brothers or something?
Yes. Bingo.
Yeah, that's crazy. Reason why I asked earlier about whether or not you would do this, Leo, is because you are able, you don't need the seed capital, right? Like, you've got a sales team, and you're already supporting yourself.
Neither does Shine Reveille, but it's free money.
Right. I understand that.
If they said, well, we would like something that conforms to our needs, whatever that is, 5 minutes, fast-paced, you know, I'm sure I'd produce something for them. Doesn't matter. The Supreme Court of
their
the United
States.
It's not even their loss. I only mention, I don't bring it up to say, I just merely want to point out this is what they're looking for. They're not looking for any of the stuff that is produced. You know, I guess they're throwing money into Angry Orange and Fred Figglesworth.
Yeah.
So there's stuff, original YouTube content they're throwing money into too.
That's true.
You got to attract the kids. I don't attract the kids. Supreme Court left in place a ruling by a New York federal appeals court which says song downloads are not considered public performances under copyright law. Yahoo and Real Networks were in litigation with the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, you know them as ASCAP, over royalty payments. ASCAP said, you owe us as if this was a public performance. And Yahoo said, no, we don't want to pay that higher rate. We want to pay the download rate. Supreme Court reviewed and agreed. Said, we're not going to hear the appeal. So that settles. That case is done.
Phew.
They won't have to. I guess they'll have to. The Second Circuit rejected the lower court's method of computing royalties, meaning now they'll have to come up with a new formula. So it still could go. What is a public performance of music online? That's the question. Is music streaming? Is Pandora a public performance? Do songwriters need royalties for streaming? I support songwriters absolutely.
Yeah, but as always, it's trying to use old metaphors in a new world.
Right,
that's what doesn't work. You got to figure out what the essential needs and benefits are and the competitive landscape, and then do something about that.
Oh, and I said AOL and Google, but Yahoo and ABC News also have a distribution pact.
I don't get that one at all.
They're going to air Good Morning America on Yahoo.
Whee!
Can't you just watch it on TV? I don't understand.
I don't get it either. Well, this is a classic case where ABC gets all happy as they get Yahoo's fire hose.
Right.
And as if traffic is a commodity that you can just shove around, which doesn't mean you can't.
Interesting.
So they're gonna report their traffic together.
Right.
What's also odd to me is that ABC lashes up with Yahoo just as its fate is extremely uncertain. You know, what if it got bought by News Corp?
Oh, Fox, ABC, they like each other.
Yeah.
There's no love. No problem there. All right, let's get our tip, our number, and our tool of the week, starting with you, Gina Trapani. I was just checking to see if you were frozen.
Not frozen.
Your tip of the week.
We have to keep moving all the time.
Just to make sure. Not frozen. This is a pretty cool tip that was new to me. I'm giving credit to the Google Operating System blog for unearthing this one. You know how, like, in your browser, if you click on a link, especially in Google results, the link turns purple because it's been a link that you visited already?
Right. That's kind of been a standard since the internet was born.
Yeah, that's been a standard in browsers forever.
Yeah.
If you have web history turned on in Google search, those purple links will show up if you visited a page on any computer. So if I visited a page on my laptop and then I go onto my desktop, it'll show that purple link, which is pretty cool. And the other thing that you can do if you have web history turned on is you can, you know when you find a page on Google and then, you know, a few weeks later, you're like, oh, that page I was looking at, and you can't, and you know that you visited it, but you can't find it again. You can actually filter or limit your search results to pages which you have already visited. So if you do a Google search, on the left side, on the left hand column, there's a link, more search tools, and you can say, just show me pages which I have already visited.
I think that's the wrong screen.
Yeah, so if you have web history turned on, you do need to have web history turned on for this.
I love that. So should I do a search?
Yeah, just do a search for something that you searched for before.
I've seen this Regina Trapani many, many times. And see, it's purple because your blog, I've been there.
Right. And so on the left-hand column, if you go down to, I think it's more search tools.
Yep.
There's a visited pages link. Click
visited
on that.
Visited and not yet visited. So these are the ones I've been to.
Yeah, so these are just the links which you have visited.
Interesting.
Your web history.
These are your sites that I haven't been to yet. Well, that's not true, but...
Yeah, so it's a neat tool if you've found the link weeks ago and you're trying to find it again and it's not in your local web.
I've been
history.
Dying for that.
That's fantastic. So,
yeah.
Oh, these are the ones you went to last time. Yeah.
Right.
Cool.
Right. Yeah, so just another way to filter results. This almost convinced me to turn web history back on. I've had it paused for a long time.
Oh, you don't use it.
I stopped using it at some point in some sort of, un-Jarvis-like privacy fit, but I think I might resume back on because this is useful. And listen, Google's tracking it either way. I might as well get the benefit of it, right? This is one of the benefits of Google holding on to my web history is that I can filter searches that way.
That's why I leave it on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now it is time for a number from Mr. Jeff Jarvis.
Well, Repler, which is some kind of job company, according to Forbes and Kashmir Hill, their privacy person, says that 91% of employers in this survey say that they do indeed go to social networking sites to screen job applicants.
Wow.
And this is going to scare you for a moment. 69% of those surveys said they had at some point rejected someone for that. However, 68% said they'd also hired someone because of what they saw. And so why were people fired? You know, is it the classic holding a drink? Well, 11% idiots do say that, but the most common reason to reject someone because of what they find is they lied about their qualifications.
Yeah, well, that's so reasonable, frankly.
The employer gets to do things, or they made discriminatory comments, or they demonstrated poor communication skills. You know, it's legit.
It is, yeah.
It is. Like, did I just need? I can't do a sentence. posted content about them using drugs or about them drinking. I think that's none of their business. And I hate that people aren't going to be able to put up a picture of them holding a beer. It's ridiculous. As if the boss doesn't drink beer. That's where society is all screwed up.
Right.
And hypocritical.
Right.
So keep your Facebook profile page. Don't be worried about just being okay for grandma or for your boss. But don't be stupid remains the basic rule of life.
And would you really want to work for a company that didn't want you as an employee?
Exactly. That's what another Forbes columnist said. And I think she was exactly right. You don't want to work with that kind of company.
Yeah,
right?
If that's going to be a big deal for them, that you were dancing around naked at Burning Man. Come on.
At Lifehacker, I definitely hired editors and interns because of their social media presence.
Well, that's
absolutely
true.
Did you reject anyone because of what you saw?
No, actually. I would just weigh favorably people who had a strong online presence. I mean, the job was blog editor, so I wanted someone that I knew had good writing skills and knew how to handle him or herself in a situation, a comment situation, or a conversation online.
Sure.
So that was part of it. But no, I never not. I mean, there are people who I befriended because they had a kind of a cool, normal, kind of like-minded, you know, I said this person is a kindred spirit from their social media presence. And there are people who I've just not engaged because they seem kind of creepy online. So I don't know, that might be kind of a rejection, but I've never not hired someone because of their social media presence.
I have to say, when we hire somebody, we certainly would pay attention to the fact that if they didn't have a web page, a Facebook page, or a Twitter account, we just kind of wonder, well, is this person even right for us, right?
Well, I went to a Davos thing yesterday, and there was a session about trying to get talent and programming talent, and a good discussion with Sean Parker and Tim Armstrong and some other people. One of the other people said that he told the story of a guy who was hiring people and interviewing them on his birthday, and four people walked in, and one of them said, "Happy birthday." Right? And it just showed off that the person did their research. That's all it is. They looked it up. And
yes, the sixth sense. Yeah.
He always respects someone who finds a way to sneak in some reference to having read a blog post or the person they hope to be their boss.
That's interesting because that can. Oh, I've met people that creeps them out. Where they go,
really?
Were you looking me up online? Maybe that's old.
Oh, see, that's interesting. I find it to be evidence of the person just being perceptive and paying attention and wanting to impress. If it's something that I wrote publicly, you know, and recently, and someone says it to me in conversation in a professional context, I'm like, oh, you either follow my stuff or you cared enough to look it up.
Yeah, that would be flattering if you, if they read your articles.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But if they knew who your third grade teacher was, that'd be a little weird.
That would be right. Well, I mean, if that was the
and
thing,
birthdays
that they chose
right
to bring
on
up,
the edge there. That's pretty personal.
Yeah, that's
interesting, Leo.
That's interesting. Huh. But if you're friends with someone on Facebook, you know it's their birthday if you've logged into Facebook.
Yeah, sure.
That just, you know, it's kind of front
but
and center.
But they've let you be their friend. Now the subscription thing muddies the water, though.
Right.
Well, but this is all what we're trying to do is find our new norms as a society.
Right. I think that's where I draw the line. If you want to look me up and read about my professional credentials and know about that, that's great. You're doing your homework. If you want to know what my kids' names are, that's
right. Yeah, you got a point there.
That's creepy if somebody you don't know comes up and says, how are Henry and Abby? It's like, huh?
Yeah, okay. I see that. Yep. Yeah.
That would be my feeling anyway. My tool of the week is something very useful. If you like to silence your phone, as I do, if you go to meetings or you're on the air and whatever it is, you don't want the phone to ring. And yet there are some numbers you really need to have ring. This is a tool I've been using for some time now. It's on the Android market called Semi-Silent. You can designate certain numbers that ring no matter what the silence settings are on your Android phone. There's a free version and there's a paid version that eliminates ads. Free version works just fine. And you don't see the ads all the time just when you're running the app. Semi-Silent. I like it a lot.
Cool. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really, you know, if you know, you don't want to miss somebody's call that you're expecting, but you want to have your phone quiet, this is good. And I'm going to give you a second one, a freebie. This is called Scribble. And I'm trying to remember where I saw this, but it's very an interesting idea. So you want to set your Android phone for battery usage. You want to set it to turn the screen off in the shortest amount of time. The shortest is 15 seconds on Android. But the problem with that is when inevitably, if it's 15 seconds, when you're doing something, it'll turn itself off. You're watching a YouTube movie and it goes black. Scribble has a very interesting idea. It was from one of the hackathons. It watches the orientation of your screen, like how your phone is being held, and doesn't turn off the screen if your phone's tilted. So if you're watching a movie or using the phone to play Scrabble, which I've been doing lately, you could set the screen turn off to be the shortest possible, but it does a very good job of keeping the phone awake as long as you're handling it. The minute you put it down, it's done. I think it's a really good idea. It's called Scribble, S-C-R-E-E-B-L, short for, I guess, screen blank or something like that.
Or a word we could find. Yeah.
Or a word we could find that wasn't taken by anybody else. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org. She blogs there. She's also, of course, the author of Think Up, a great application that is used to cull information out of Twitter feeds. ThinkUpApp.com, right?
Yes, and new release tomorrow with Google Plus, 9 a.m. Pacific tomorrow. Download the new release of ThinkUp.
Yay! That's fantastic.
Very excited to ship this. Yeah.
So it'll have both my Google Plus and my tweets.
Yep. So we got Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus support.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Gina, can I get back on your server?
Absolutely. Let's get that set up. In fact, we're doing some maintenance.
I just feel like I'm dumb, but thank you.
Yeah. I'll get you set up for
sure. Awesome. 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 Jeff Jarvis is
going to college. Killed me. Yeah.
Yes. It killed your brain cells. Yeah. Buzzmachine.com is his blog, at Jeff Jarvis on Twitter, plus Jeff Jarvis on Google Plus, and of course the new book you must get. Go right now to the bookstore. That one down the street that still sells paper books and pick up public parts. It's awesome. Kevin Marks coming up this afternoon on triangulation.
Wow.
I should have teased you. I should have said, do we know anybody who invented podcasting 2 years before Adam Curry and Dave Weiner, who created QuickTime at Apple Computer, who went to work for Technorati where he was the chief engineer, who went to work at Google where he was in charge of micro formats and profiles? Do we know anybody like that? Yes, we do. And you've probably heard him many times on this show, Kevin
And he's
Marks.
Watching us right now.
He is.
He
and
is.
The only
he's
reason
in the chat room.
I didn't pull him on this show is because we're going to talk to him for a full hour. I've wanted to do this for a while because he's on many of our shows. But to sit down and to talk to this guy who has really been so important to technology for so many years will be a lot of fun. Currently, he's at Salesforce.com. But Kevin Marks joins us at 4 p.m. for triangulation. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.